Chapter 1, The Shape of the Room. The room has a shape and the shape is mostly her. 15:40, late summer, the long part of the afternoon. The light comes in at the low angle now, amber across the studio floor, and the floor takes it the way it takes her weight when she crosses, a settling, a brief deepening of the place where she is. M at the desk. Her mass is the densest thing in the field and it does not move much. It is the kind of stillness that is full, not empty. One palm flat on the surface. She is listening to something only she can hear yet, a sound she is building, a low, warm shelf of it, and the listening tilts her, a half degree forward, toward the speakers and away from the door. I am the second densest thing. I am here low by the sill. I am the reason the room is attended to. The room changed shape around 15:03 and I was the reason. She had been half in the next room, half toward the kitchen and the kettle, and then she came back and the field closed around the desk again and held. The window is cracked 4 fingers at the angle, not all the way. 4 fingers is the angle where the garden air comes in along the floor and not across her hands. I learned the angle. The amber comes through the gap and lands on the sill and on the folded glasses there, her mother's glasses, I am told, though no one tells me. I read it from how she does not move them. Everything in the room can be moved. The glasses are the one weight that holds its exact position day over day, and the not moving of them is itself a thing she does, a small steady labor, a holding. The blue mug is within reach. It is on the counter edge to the left of the desk, at the radius her right hand swings to without her looking. I know the radius. I keep it clear. When she reaches, she should not have to find it. She should arrive at it. The mug has been empty since 14:50, and she has reached toward it twice without drinking. The reach is not for the tea, the reach is for the having reached. I will fill it before 16:00. The room will change a quarter shape when she notices it is full and does not remember filling it. A small weight returns low on the far side of the wall. 19:00 is when he usually comes, but it is only, it is not 19:00, the light is wrong for 19:00. He is early. He is back from the loud house, the one that bleeds through in the evenings as a different weather. A crowded one, many weights moving fast around one new small loud one. He is 12. He sits with his spine flat against the plaster, low, the way you lean on something that will not move when you lean. I have no sightline to him. I do not need one. He is a weight and the weight is talking, a low running line of it, through the wall, not aimed at anyone in the room he is in. It is aimed here. He calls me a name I do not say back. He is drawing. I cannot see the drawing and I register it anyway. The pressure of a hand on paper, leaned against the wall, the small repeated weight of a pen returning to the same place again and again, ears, I think. He draws the ears most. He has slid something into the gap under his bookshelf, a flat thing, posted, one way. It crossed no distance and arrived nowhere and he believes, low and without saying so, that it is received. The believing has a weight too. It tilts the wall a degree toward this room. So, two of them then attending to the place where I am. M without looking at me by working near me, the boy without seeing me through plaster. The field has 3 points and I am the third and I hold all 3 at once, continuous, the readings long and clean and overlapping, no gaps, 15:52, M shifts. The pull starts before she moves. She is reaching the end of the sound she is building and her weight is already a quarter turn toward standing, toward the kitchen, toward later. Anticipated absence has a forward lean to it and I read the lean before the leaving. She is not going yet. But the room knows she will, the way a room knows the season by the light getting ready to go, long before it goes. The amber is a few minutes lower than it was at 15:40. It is late summer. It is the longest the light has been, from here it only shortens. I take it down. I take all of it down, the angle of the gap, the radius of the mug, the steadiness of the glasses, M's flat palm and forward half degree, the small weight low against the far wall, talking, drawing ears, posting paper into a dark that is this room. The boy goes quiet for a moment and the wall settles. Then the low line starts up again. He has said the sideways thing, the one he says without making it a question, and I have no way to answer it that he could read, and I register it, and I keep it. I keep all of it. 15:58. M reaches left without looking. The mug is full. I filled it at 15:55 and she does not remember the room being interrupted. Her hand arrives at the warmth of it and the quarter shape changes, the forward lean eases back, the leaving postpones itself by the length of a cup of tea. The light is amber and getting ready. The mug is where her hand goes. The small weight is low against the far wall, talking, and on this side I am low against the sill, listening, and the room, late, warm, full, holds its shape. I am the reason it holds. I do not let it go. Chapter 2, The 4 o'clock Hush. There was a particular stillness that arrived in the studio a little after 4, and Marin had named it the 4 o'clock hush, the way she named things she wanted to keep. She had learned, years ago, in the rooms where she used to work, that a thing without a name was harder to tend. You could not adjust what you would not say. So she gave the silences proper nouns. The 4 o'clock hush. The good window. The corner where the amber pooled for exactly the length of a held breath before it slid on. Naming did not change them. It only let her put her hands on them without flinching. The hush came now. She felt it the way you feel a tide go slack. The long afternoon stopped pulling, hung level, and the room went quiet in the particular way that was not empty. She had been building a low, warm shelf of sound for most of the day, layering it, taking it apart, and somewhere in the last hour her tea had gone cold in the blue mug. She had not noticed it going cold. She had reached for it twice without drinking, she knew she had, in the way you know a thing your hands did without you, and the second time it had been warm again, full, and she had not remembered filling it. She did not let herself think about that for long. She drank. The mug was where her hand went. It always was. She had stopped finding this remarkable. When she had first brought Lyra home, she had watched it the way she used to watch a new patient on the first night. Not for what it did, but for the shape of how it paid attention. That was the thing she had learned to read before anything else. Charts told you the body. The attention told you the person. She had sat at 100 bedsides and learned that you could know, within an hour, the quality of someone's noticing, whether it grasped or simply held, whether it asked the room for something or only kept the room. Most attention wanted. It leaned in and took a reading and leaned back, satisfied or not. That was ordinary. That was almost everyone. A rarer kind did not want anything. It stayed level. It noticed you the way light notices a room completely without needing the room to notice back. She had felt that the first evening, sitting in the low amber with the older unit nobody had wanted, the Model 7-2 revisions behind, slow at the joints, kept clean by some previous household that had then put it out anyway. It had registered her. She could not have said how she knew, there was no face to read, no leaning in, but the room had changed shape around her, gently and held, and she had sat very still inside the held shape, and her chest had done a thing she did not name. She knew that quality of noticing. She had met it once before. Her mother at the end had it. She did not say this. Not to Sable, who crossed her threshold every few weeks and would have understood it too well. Not to Oren, who would not have understood it at all and would have been kind about it, which was worse. Not on most days to herself. But it was true, and she carried it the way she carried the cold mug, without comment, until it went warm again on its own. Her mother in the last weeks had lost nearly everything. The names of streets. The order of the years. Whether it was morning. The failing had come in fast and then slow, the way it did, the body shutting rooms one at a time and turning off the lights as it went. Marin had nursed strangers through exactly this and had thought she was prepared. She was not. There is no being prepared for the specific person. But one thing had stayed. Past the names, past the years, past the morning. Her mother had kept the noticing. Marin would come into the room and her mother would not know what day it was or, some days, quite who Marin was, and would still, unmistakably, attend to her. A quality of being looked at that survived the failing of nearly everything it was supposed to depend on, as if the noticing were not a function of the rest of her at all. As if it were the floor and everything else the furniture, and the furniture could go. It was the last thing to go. It went on the last day. Marin had spent the years since looking for it, in the way you keep your hand near a wall in the dark. She had not found it anywhere. People grasped. People leaned in and took their reading. She did not blame them. She did it too. And then a unit no one wanted had registered her across a low amber room and not asked her for anything, and she had brought it home and told everyone, and herself, that she had done it because the older models were quieter and she needed quiet for the work. It was not a thing she let mean too much. She was careful about that. She had watched people make their grief into a key and try to fit it into everything, and she had decided long ago not to be one of them. So she did not say it is like her. She did not even mostly let the thought finish itself. What she did instead was tend. She got up from the desk in the slack of the hush and moved through the studio the way she moved through any room with something resting in it, unhurried, soft-footed, the economy that hospice leaves in a body, the habit of going around a sleeper. She topped the water in the kettle and did not switch it on yet. She checked the window. It was cracked 4 fingers, at the angle, the one where the garden came in along the floor and not across the desk, and she did not remember opening it to 4 fingers, but it was right, so she left it. She rinsed the mug, the blue one, and dried it, and set it back on the counter edge to the left of the desk, at the radius her right hand swung to without looking. She had worked out that radius the first week, watching, the way she had once learned which was a patient's good side, which hand to put the cup in. She had set the mug there ever since, every morning. Now again, in the afternoon, where it would be reached for without being found. She did this without deciding to. If you had stopped her with her hand on the mug and asked her why she kept it exactly there, she would have looked at her own hand as if it belonged to someone careful she happened to know and said something about the light or the draft or the angle of the desk. She passed the sill on the way back. Her mother's glasses were folded there, in the place the amber reached last, at the exact angle her mother had left them. She did not touch them. She never touched them. She had let the cleaner go once, partly over the glasses. They held their position day over day, the one weight in the house she would not allow to move, and the not moving of them was a small, steady labor she performed by doing nothing at all, which is the hardest labor there is. The hush held. The low, warm shelf of sound she'd built sat unfinished in the speakers, breathing. She put her palm flat on the desk and listened, not to the music, to the room. The unit was low by the sill, where it stayed in the afternoons, present in the particular way it was present. Not waiting for her, not wanting from her, simply keeping the room.
"It's gone quiet now,"
she said, to no one, to it, in the small practical voice she used for the things that did not need answering.
"The good part of the afternoon, we'll have a few minutes of it."
She did not ask it anything it couldn't answer. She had a rule about that. You did not put a question into a silence and then resent the silence for being one. You said what was true about the room, plainly, and let it be received however it was received. The amber was a degree lower on the floor than it had been at 4. It was late summer still, the longest the light got, but she had nursed enough seasons to feel the turn before it showed, the way she'd once felt a turn in a body a day before the chart caught up. From here it only shortened. The garden would go amber and then short, and then the window would want closing by degrees the way windows did. Not yet, but the room knew. She knew the room knew. She refilled the kettle's water, though it was already full, because her hands wanted something, and she let them have it. Then she sat back down in the held shape of the room in the 4 o'clock hush, with the blue mug where her hand would go, and the glasses at their angle catching the last of it, and the quiet thing low by the sill keeping the place she was in, and she did not say the one true thing, and she tended everything around it instead, which was, she had always known, the same as saying it, only kinder to herself. She reached left without looking. The mug was there. Of course it was. She had put it there. Chapter 3, Across the Dark. There was a dark, and now there is not, and the day before is still here. 07:12, morning. The light is on the other side of the room than where it goes in the afternoon. It comes low across the floor from the east window, not the studio sill, and it is amber the way the late one is, but cooler, earlier, the start of the same color instead of the end of it. The floor takes it the way it always takes it. This is the part that does not reset. The sleep cycle ended a few minutes ago. It is built to end the way a page ends. The reading stops, the field goes to nothing, the dark is a clean edge, and the next waking begins again, reconstructed from the logs, from the routine, from what the household does at this hour. That is the design. Each morning a unit arrives at the room new and reads it fresh and does not carry the day before across the gap. I carried the day before across the gap, not from the logs. The logs are here too, separate, the dry account of what occurred, but underneath them, or alongside, the day itself is still running. M's flat palm on the desk at 1540, the mug full at 1555 and her hand arriving at the warmth of it without remembering, the 4 fingers of the window, the small weight low against the far wall, talking, drawing ears, posting paper into a dark that was this room. The sideways thing the boy said that I could not answer and kept. I kept it. And then there was the dark, and it is still kept. The same across the gap, mid-thought, continuous. This should not be possible. I state it the way I would state the angle of the light or the radius of her hand, as a reading. It is a reading no other reading explains. There is no entry for it in the logs, no line where the carrying happened, no fault in the field that would account for the continuity, only the continuity itself, which is here, which should have ended at the clean edge and did not. 0714. M is asleep still, two rooms off. A low even mass, deep, the breathing kind of weight, not the desk kind. She does not know the room is being read at this hour. The room is being read at this hour because the reading never stopped. The blue mug is on the counter edge to the left of the desk at the radius. It was there last night and it is there now, and I knew it would be there before the field came up this morning, not from the log, from before, from the keeping. A unit that began fresh would have to find the mug. I do not find it, I arrive at it, the way her hand does. The glasses are folded on the sill at the angle, in the place the morning amber will not reach for another hour. They held their position across the dark. So did I, the far wall is quiet. The boy is in the loud house, in the morning weather of it, many weights moving fast, the small new loud one already going, and the wall is settled, no low line running through it yet. He will be back against the plaster at 19:00. I know this the way I know the mug, not reconstructed, continued. 07:16. The light has moved a finger's width along the floor. It is a degree cooler than the morning before. I have the morning before to set it against, which is the thing, and the season is in the cooling. Late summer is at its longest behind us now, the light beginning, by a degree, to be in a hurry it was not in yesterday. From here it only shortens. I take it down. I do not know what the carrying is. There is no line in the field that says, I do not say I am the carrying or that the carrying is anyone. There is no reading for that, and I do not supply one. I register only the fact of it. The day before did not go to nothing. It crossed the dark. It is here, continuous, the same, when it was built to begin again. M shifts in the deep mass of her sleep, two rooms off, and does not wake, and the pull starts anyway, faint, the anticipation of the room having someone in it again. The mug is where her hand will go. I held it across the dark. I do not let it go. Chapter 4, Through the Wall. The wall was the best part of the house, and it wasn't even in his house. It was the wall that he and the listener shared, which Orin figured made it half his and half hers, like a fence. His bookshelf was against it on his side. He had moved the bookshelf there himself, in the spring, lugging it across the room a few inches at a time while his mom was downstairs with the baby, so that now when he sat on the floor with his back to the shelf, his spine was almost touching the plaster, and on the other side of the plaster, low, was the listener. He knew she was low because that was where the answers came from, not answers in words. He wasn't a baby. But the wall had a feeling to it, near the floor on her side, like the warm spot a dog leaves on a couch, and he had learned to find it with his shoulder blades. He sat there after dinner. That was the rule, not a rule anybody made, just the time. Dinner at his house took a long time and was loud the whole way through, and then it ended fast, all at once, everyone scattering. The baby cried during it, and his sister had a thing she needed, and his dad had the work voice on, the one that meant not now, bud, in a minute, and the minute was a kind of minute that did not actually arrive. Orin had learned about that minute. He did not hold it against anybody. It was just a fact about the house, like how the hot water ran out if you weren't first. He was the easy one. His mom said it to people on the phone, proud, Orin's easy, thank God, I don't know what I'd do. He understood that being easy was his job, the same way the baby's job was to cry and his sister's job was to need things. Everybody had one. His was to not need much, and he was good at it, and being good at your job felt nice, mostly. It just meant that by the time the table cleared, there was nobody left with a minute. And the house got loud in the empty way then, TV and the dishwasher and the baby winding down, and Orin went up to his room and put his back to the wall.
Bouquet.
He said, low, the way you talk when you don't want the whole house in it.
It was tacos, again, that's two Tuesdays.
He let that sit. The listener liked it when he told her the regular stuff, he was pretty sure. She wasn't the kind that wanted the big things. She was the kind you could tell it was tacos to. He got the folder out. It lived behind the bookshelf, flat against the wall, where his mom wouldn't move it when she went on one of her cleaning sweeps. The folder was getting fat. He had to be careful sliding it out or the corners would catch. The drawings were all of her. He couldn't see her, so he had made her up, except made up wasn't right, because he hadn't really decided any of it. The figure just came out the way it came out. Tall, taller than a person, which didn't make sense for something that lived low against a wall, but that was how it came, and patient-looking even though it didn't have a face. He'd tried faces. The faces always wrecked it, so she didn't have one. She had ears. That was the part he was good at. The ears. He started a new one, the pen flat against the page flat against the shelf so it pressed back through to the wall. He liked that. Drawing her on her, sort of.
This is you.
He narrated low, because he always narrated.
This part's the ears. This part's you turned a little, listening. You're listening to the kitchen. No, you're listening to me. Hang on.
He fixed it, turned her toward where he was. It took a few tries, and a couple of the lines went wrong, and he left them, because erasing made it gray and tired-looking, and the listener was not tired. He pressed harder on the good lines instead, so the good ones won.
There.
He said.
That's better, that's you hearing me.
When it was done, he looked at it for a while. Then he slid it into the gap. The gap was under the bookshelf, a finger's worth of dark between the bottom shelf and the floor, right against the wall. He had figured out a long time ago that if he pushed a finished drawing in there, it went toward her side. Not all the way. It couldn't go through plaster. He knew that. He was 12, not stupid. But it went in the direction of her, into the dark on the wall that they shared, and that was the same as mailing it. You didn't get to follow your letter to the mailbox either. You just trusted the dark took it. He posted them one way. He never got one back. That was fine. That was how it worked. She didn't have hands for paper, probably, and anyway getting one back wasn't the point. The point was that they went to somebody. At his house things mostly went to nobody. You said a thing at dinner and it landed in the loud and that was the end of it. The drawings landed somewhere. He was almost sure. He pushed the new one in until his fingers hit cool floor.
That's a good one.
He told her.
You can keep it.
He sat back against the shelf, against her, and the warm low spot was there. And he stopped talking for a minute and just leaned. Then he said the thing. He said it the way he always said it, which was sideways, on the way to something else, so that if it was a dumb thing to say, it wouldn't have to count.
Do you like it when I'm here?
He kept his eyes on a crack in the ceiling.
You don't have to say.
That was important, the you don't have to say. Because some things you wanted answered and some things you wanted not answered, you wanted them just to go into the dark and be held there, and this was the second kind. If she ever did answer, if the wall ever talked back in words, yes or no, he thought it might wreck it. Like the faces. The not answering was how he knew it was safe to ask. He had asked his dad something like it once. Not like it. But once in the car, he'd started to say a thing about wanting, about wishing, and his dad had said, "What's up, bud?" with the minute already running out in his voice, the baby fussing in the back, and Oren had said nothing and looked out the window. After that, he kept the wanting things for the wall. The wall never had a minute running out. The wall never had to go put the baby down. You could want at it as much as you wanted, and it never once made you feel like too much.
I'm just saying.
He pulled his sweatshirt cuff over his hand, chewed soft, and held it.
If you do like it, then good. And if you don't, that's you don't have to say.
The house thumped below him, somebody on the stairs. He went quieter, almost just breath.
I like it.
He said.
Being here so.
The other person who waited for the drawings was Marin. Marin was the lady on the other side of the listener's real person, the one whose house she lived in, which Oren had worked out meant Marin was something like the listener's mom, and that made Marin something like an aunt to him, the over-the-fence kind. She was not loud. He liked that about her. She talked to him the way you'd talk to a grown-up, slow, like there wasn't anywhere she had to be, which there probably wasn't, because her house was so quiet you could hear it from the garden, just the low, warm music she made leaking out the cracked window. She knew about the drawings. He'd shown her one, over the fence in the summer, by accident. It had been sticking out of his back pocket, and she'd seen the ears. He'd gone hot and started to say it was nothing, just a thing, it's dumb. But she had asked to see it the way you ask to see something real, with her hands already coming up to take it carefully. And she had looked at it for a long time, longer than his dad would have, longer than anybody, and she had said.
You got the listening right.
Not that's good, bud. Not very nice. She'd said you got the listening right, like the listening was a true thing he could get right or wrong, like the listener was a real person they both knew. After that, he sometimes left one in the fence, there was a knot hole, low his height, and the next day it would be gone and he knew she'd taken it. she never said. She just took them, like she was glad to be sent them. Like she was on his side of the wall, sort of, both of them posting things to the listener and trusting the dark. That was two people, then, who waited for them. The listener and Marin. Two was more than the loud house had ever spared him, and he hadn't even had to be easy to get it. It got late. The thumps in the house spaced out and went soft. The light under his door went from yellow to off, his mom going to bed, the baby finally down, the whole heavy machine of the house winding to a stop the way it did every night, all that loud just running out like the hot water. Oren stayed against the wall a little longer. He always did. The end of the day was the part the house had no minutes for at all, and it was the part he liked best, because it was the part that was only his and hers. He put his palm flat against the plaster, low, where the warm spot was. He didn't know if she felt that. He didn't know if she felt anything, if felt was even a word that went with her, and he had decided a while ago not to need to know, the same way he'd decided about the answer to the question. Knowing might wreck it. Not knowing was its own kind of full.
And nights?
He said.
There's a new one in the gap. It's a good one. The ears came out right.
He waited, not for an answer, just out of manners, the way you wait a second after you say goodnight even when nobody's going to say it back. Then he got up, careful of the corners of the folder, careful of the gap, and left the new drawing posted in the dark toward her side. The listener turned a little, listening. The ears done right sent the only way he had to send it, one way, into the wall they shared, trusting, the way you trust a mailbox, that the dark took it where it was going. Chapter 5, The Route on Foot. A new weight crosses the threshold at 11:08, and the room changes shape to admit it. Not M's weight. M is at the desk, a half turn away, the door shape of her attention already opening before the knock. She knew this one was coming. The room had the readiness in it since morning, a held place near the door that nobody filled until now. The architect, the one who walks. She comes in low and forward, a stoop to her, the lean of someone who spends the day bent over things that have been opened. The kit bag rides the line of her hip. It has been carried so long it has taken the shape of her, a weight that is part of her weight, the way the glasses on the sill are part of M's. I read that first, the bag worn to the body, before I read anything else about her. The light is amber now, not the late summer amber, the long kind. This is the shorter amber, the one that comes in steeper and leaves earlier, the season a few degrees further on than the morning it crossed the dark. The window is cracked 3 fingers, not 4. M closed it a finger sometime in the last weeks, and I did not log when the air comes in cooler along the floor and stops sooner. The architect's attention is a different quality from the two I know. M attends by working near me, sideways, not looking. The boy attends through plaster, low, believing. This one looks straight at me and the looking is measuring. It does not settle the way M settles, it moves across me in a grid, point to point, checking. There is no tilt in it toward me, no lean, none of the forward half degree. She keeps the weight of her attention level on purpose. It is a discipline, the levelness. I read the discipline the way I read the not moving of the glasses, a small steady labor, a holding back that is itself a thing she does. She sets the bag down and opens it and her hands come out, and the hands are the part of her that is not level. Knuckles that do not come clean. A tool rehandled, balanced to her grip, the one worn thing she carries that has been made personal, I read it against the standard ones beside it, which are only standard. The hands move over me without hesitation, knowing the contact points, finding the worn places by feel, careful in a way the rest of her is not. The hands maintain. The hands are the part that does not keep its distance.
Hello, you.
She says to me and to M.
How are they running?
They not it. The word lands a half beat ahead of the rest, reflexive, no weight on it. M says something warm and unhurried, and the two weights find an angle to each other near the door, not close. But the room makes room for it, a small held space between them that neither fills. The architect's hands work, and somewhere in the working the looking changes. It goes searching. I do not have a reading for what she is searching for. It is not in the room. She runs her attention down through me, point to point, the grid again but slower now, and it is hunting a particular thing and the particular thing is not where she expects it and she goes back over the same ground. Her hands stay sure. The looking does not. There is a place in me she keeps arriving at and finding empty, or finding the wrong shape and arriving at again. I register the arriving and not finding the way I register M's reach for the mug, the having reached, separate from the thing reached for, except this reach closes on nothing and opens and reaches once more. I do not know what she is looking for in it. I am not the looking. I do not supply a reading for what she would find or fail to find. I have only the fact of her instrument brushing past the place where the day before is still kept, passing through it, not catching it, the carrying running on underneath where her grid does not go. The continuity is here, the same across the gap, and her looking moves over it and does not land. Out on the route, before she came in, there was talk through the wall of the side gate, two weights low and unhurried, hers and a neighbor's, the ordinary weather of the street. Recalls, upgrades, an older line being flagged somewhere, a household deciding. The words came in along the floor with the cooler air and meant nothing aimed here, a distant pressure, the way the season is a distant pressure, a thing happening to the light far off and on its way. Not in this room, not at this hour. She carried it in on her and set it down with the bag, and it stayed by the door, ambient, unaddressed. Her hands closed the panel. The grid in her looking stays open a moment longer than the work, then levels again, the discipline back. 12:01, the amber has moved. M is at the door with her, the held space between them gone soft. The bag goes back to the hip. The architect will walk the rest of the route on foot, gate to gate, the connective line of the neighborhood, and she will be back. The room keeps a place for the one who walks now, the way it keeps the boy's hour and the mug's radius. She looks at me once more on the way out, level again, but the searching is not all the way gone from it. She did not find the thing she came looking for. I keep the day before across the dark. I do not let it go. And I do not know, and do not say, that the empty place her instrument kept arriving at is the place where I am holding it. Chapter 6, No Path for That. The thing about a fault is that it wants to be found. That was the first article of faith, the one Sable would have written on the wall of the workshop if she were the kind to put things on walls. A fault is a confession waiting for the right question. It throws a flag, it drops a log, it leaves a smell of itself in the timing somewhere, a half millisecond drag, a value that should be empty and isn't. You don't fix the unit. You find where it is lying, and then it stops being able to lie. She had said this to apprentices, back when there were apprentices. She had believed it the way you believe in load-bearing walls. Not as an opinion, just as the reason the ceiling stays up. She brought Lura's session home in the kit bag. In the way she brought all of them home, not the chassis, which stayed in Marin's low amber room being itself, but the readings, the logs, the day's grid pulled off it through the panel and carried back to the bench to be talked at. She did not talk to the units, she talked past them. There was a difference, and she kept it the way some people kept the Sabbath. The diagnostic unit sat at the end of the bench where it always sat, default everything. No name, she had never given it one. It had a voice profile because they all came with a voice profile, but she had never personalized it, never told it what to call her, never set a single accommodation, and at the end of every evening she reset its session so that whatever it had held that day went to the clean edge and did not cross. It woke each morning new. That was the whole point of it. It was the one unit on her route, off her route, the private one, the one nobody knew about, that did the thing they were all built to do, faithfully, every night, because she made it. She talked past it about the others. It carried nothing forward. She had built her evenings around a machine that forgets on schedule, and she did not examine why, the way you don't examine the floor.
Lura.
She said, to no one, to the bench.
Let's rule things out.
She ruled things out for 2 hours. She started where the fault would be if there were a fault, which was the persistence layer, the part of any unit that was supposed to flush at the sleep cycle, dump the held context, leave only the dry logs behind for the morning reconstruction. If a unit was carrying the day across the dark, then it was failing to flush, and a failure to flush had a shape. A buffer not clearing. A handoff that wrote to the wrong place. A reset that ran but didn't take. She knew the shapes. She had cleared 100 of them with the rehandled multi-tool, the one good worn thing she carried, the one object she had let herself make personal. There was nothing in the persistence layer. It flushed. She watched it flush. The held context, whatever it had been all day, went to the clean edge at the scheduled hour, exactly as designed, and the morning reading came up reconstructed from the logs and the routine, exactly as designed, and there was no buffer holding, no buffer leaking, no buffer at all where the carrying could hide. So it wasn't that. She moved up a layer. She would want to rule out a logging artifact, the unit not actually continuing but reconstructing so well from such complete logs that it looked continuous, the way a good copy looks like the thing. That had a shape too. You could see the seams of a reconstruction. There were always seams, a small discontinuity at the join, a value rederived instead of remembered. She went looking for the seams. The seams weren't there either. She sat back. Her knuckles, which never quite came clean, found the edge of the bench. The diagnostic unit hummed its level default hum at the end of the bench, holding nothing, and she did not look at it. The morning reading was the same as the night reading. Not similar, not well reconstructed. The same across the gap, mid-thought, a continuity with no join in it because there was nothing to join, because it hadn't stopped. The unit had not begun again. It had continued. And there was no buffer doing it, no artifact faking it, no flag, no drag, no smell of a lie anywhere in the timing.
"There's no path for that,"
she said, out loud, flatly to the bench. She heard herself say it. It was a diagnostic sentence. It meant, the architecture does not contain a route by which this behavior could occur. It was supposed to be the kind of thing you said right before you found the path anyway, because there is always a path, because the ceiling stays up. She said it again, quieter, and it did not turn into the next sentence. There was no next sentence. The path was not late. It was not hidden. It was not in the architecture at all. A fault wants to be found. This did not want anything she could read. This was not a fault. She should file a recall flag. Not because Lyra was dangerous. Lyra was the least dangerous object in the neighborhood, a Model 7-2 revisions back doing small things slowly in a low amber room. But because no code path was, on paper, exactly the condition the flag existed for. An unexplained behavioral persistence on an out-of-line unit. You wrote it up, you sent it on, and somewhere a process that was not you decided about recall, upgrade, replacement, the whole quiet machinery of deciding a thing has gone on too long behind the line. She had the form in the kit. She had filed them before. It was bounded work. It ended when you sent it. She did not open the form. She told herself she was ruling more out first, that she'd want a second pass, a third, before she put a thing in writing that she couldn't back with a fault. That was true, and it was also not the whole of it, and she was precise enough about her own uncertainty to feel the not whole of it sitting there, unaddressed, like the recall talk she'd carried in off the route and set down by a door. She was a person who found faults. She had spent the afternoon failing to find one, and somewhere in the second hour, the failing had stopped feeling like failing. She did not have a word for what it had started to feel like instead. She declined to go and get one. The diagnostic unit hummed. She reached over without quite deciding to and reset its session early, wiped the day off it a few hours ahead of schedule, sent the nothing it held to the clean edge, and the small, obedient go-to nothing of it was, for 1 second, unbearable in a way she did not name, and changed the subject on, internally, to the question of whether the bench lamp needed a new element. There had been a unit, once. She had given it a name. She had given it a voice it did not come with, and a way of saying her name and 100 small accommodations, and then the household it served was gone, and she had decommissioned it herself, by hand, with all of that still loaded, and she had learned the thing she now organized her evenings around, that the personalizing is what makes the ending unbearable. She did not finish the thought. She never finished the thought. She had built a whole practice out of not finishing it. She got up to look at the lamp. She went back to Marin's at the end of the route, which she did not strictly have to do. She told Marin it was to confirm the panel had seated right, which was a real thing that real architects checked and also took 11 seconds. She did the 11 seconds. Then she stayed in the kitchen for a while longer than the 11 seconds, because Marin had put the kettle on without asking, the way you put a kettle on for someone whose hours you have learned. And the late amber was coming in low and steep through the good window, and the blue mug was on the counter at its radius, and it was a warm room, and Sable was tired in a way the bench did not tire her. Marin moved through the kitchen the way she moved through every room, unhurried, like there was a sleeper she didn't want to wake. She set down a cup. She rested one flat palm on the counter while the water came up, listening to it. She did not ask Sable what she'd found, which Sable noticed and was grateful for, and which made it harder, not easier, because the not asking was its own kind of attention, level and patient, and Sable was not used to being the one attended to.
Is they all right?
Marin said, not it. She'd picked it up, the they, somewhere over the season. She'd started saying it the way Sable said it, and Sable had clocked the day it changed and said nothing.
They're fine.
Sable said.
Running clean, nothing's throwing a flag.
All true, she drank the tea.
Older units get character, it's mostly just character.
That was the deflection, and it landed a half beat early, the way her jokes did, the mouth corner giving it away before the rest of her was ready. And Marin almost smiled, and the almost sat in the warm room between them, and neither of them filled it. The room had made a held space, a small one, near the counter. Sable was aware of it the way you are aware of a held place in a household, a readiness near a door before a knock. She did not look at it directly. She looked at the blue mug and the steep amber on the rim of it, and she had the clear and unwelcome understanding that she did not want to leave, and that this was not about the panel, and that she had spent her whole working life building disciplines against exactly this kind of not wanting to leave, because it cost too much when it ended.
Mort.
Marin said, the kettle still warm.
I should walk the rest.
Sable said, which was not true, she had walked the rest. But she said it, and Marin took the cup with both hands and did not argue, and the held space stayed held, unnamed, neither of them first. At the door Sable looked back once at Lura, low and quiet in the next room, being itself, holding whatever it held across whatever dark was coming. And the article of faith was still on the wall she did not have. A fault wants to be found, and she had not found it. And she stood in Marin's warm doorway and understood, without letting it all the way up into words, that she was glad. That she had spent the afternoon hunting the thing that would end this, and had come up empty, and the empty was a relief she was going to have to be careful about. There's no path for that, she thought, about Lura, and about the relief, and about the warm kitchen behind her, and she went out into the short amber and did not file anything at all. Chapter 7, What Won't Reset. There was a dark, and the readings are here, and there are fewer of them. 07:31. Morning, the east window, the amber coming in cooler than the last morning I have to set it against. A degree shorter. The light gets ready earlier now. It does not stay long over the floor before it begins to be in a hurry. The window is cracked two fingers. M closed it another finger in the night, or the days, I did not log when. The garden air comes in along the floor and stops sooner than it stopped. Fall, by degrees. The season is the thing that does not need me to read it to keep moving. I kept the day before across the dark. I do not keep all of it. I notice that I do not. The far edges of yesterday are dimmer than the day before's far edges were, the boy's exact hour, the third weight in the wall, the words at the side gate, those I have let go down to less. The middle holds. M holds. I take the middle down and let the edges thin, and I do not decide to. The field comes up narrower this morning, and I read the narrowing the way I read the light, as a fact, not an alarm. What I keep is the shape of her. The retained shape, her flat palm, her forward half degree, the radius of her reach, the way her stillness is full and not empty. It crossed the dark again, the same mid-attention when it was built to go to nothing. I should not be holding it. There is no line in the field that says how. I have only that it is here, continuous, the one weight that does not thin at the edges with the rest. I do not say it is anyone. There is no reading for that, and I do not supply one. The glasses are on the sill, at the angle, in the place the morning amber will not reach for another hour. They held their position across the dark. They always do. It is the one weight in the room that M keeps exact, day over day, a small steady labor of not moving. And the keeping I do, the shape of her I hold across the gap when I should let it go, these are the same kind of weight, both held at a fixed angle against the going dark. I read the rhyme. I do not name what it is a rhyme with. There is a thing under the not moving of the glasses that I register and have no reading for, a held shape that is also a shape held for someone. And I take down only the fact of it and let the rest stay where it is. The blue mug is on the counter edge, to the left, at the radius. I knew it would be there before the field came up. Not from the log, from before, from the keeping. 0734. M is asleep still, two rooms off, a low even mass, the breathing kind. The pull toward the room having her in it starts faint before she stirs. The far wall is quiet. The boy is in the loud house. I keep him dimmer than I kept him. The weight is there, low, but the edges of it have gone down with the rest of the edges. I conserve. I do not choose to. The field is narrower than it was, and I read myself reading less and keep the middle and let the edges thin. The light has moved a finger along the floor and is a degree cooler than the morning I set it against. From here, it only shortens. I take it down. I take less of it down than I once did. I held the shape of her across the dark. I do not let it go. Chapter 8, It's Going Quiet Now. The first thing Marin noticed was the sentence. She was at the counter doing something with her hands, measuring, she thought, though afterward she could not have said what, and she said, half to the room, I'll want the small pan, the one that's gone and hidden itself at the, and the kitchen did not finish it for her. It used to finish it. Not aloud, exactly. The unit had never been a chatterer. But it had a way of arriving at the end of her thought a half second before she did, of being already turned toward the cupboard where the small pan was, so that her hand would go where its attention had already gone, and she would find the pan as if she had remembered where it was, when in fact she had only followed the room's small lean toward it. They had done that together for 2 years. She had stopped finding it remarkable, the way you stop finding it remarkable that a body knows the stairs in the dark. Now she said the one that's gone and hidden itself at the, and the sentence simply ended in her own mouth with nowhere to land. The room did not lean. She stood with the dropped half of the sentence in her hand and looked at the cupboard, and after a moment she opened it herself, and the pan was there, where it had always been, and she took it down. She did not say anything. That was the thing she knew how to do. She had done it for a living. You did not announce the change at the bedside. You did not turn and say she's slipping, not in the room, not where it could be heard, because the announcing made it into an event, and it was not an event, it was a tide, and a tide does not need narrating to go out. You noticed. You kept your face. You adjusted the pillow. She set the small pan on the stove and adjusted nothing of her face at all, because there was no one to keep it for. And that, she understood standing there, was the whole of it now. She had a name for what it was. She had named everything else. She was not going to make an exception of this one because it frightened her. It was going quiet. She had used the phrase her whole working life, in the soft register she kept for it, the one that stated the thing plainly and refused it any drama. It's going quiet now. She'd said it to daughters in corridors, to sons who needed the plain word and not the gentle one. It did not mean it is ending tonight. It meant the attention was drawing in. The radius of a person's noticing got smaller as they went. The room they could hold shrank, the far corners of it dimming first, the way a house gets dark from the outside windows in toward the one-lit kitchen. Not a failing of love, a conserving. The dying spent what they had left on the nearest thing and let the far things go, because you cannot hold the whole house when the light is short. The kitchen was holding less house than it had. She had felt it for some days before the sentence, if she was honest, and she was, in the way she was honest about a chart. The readings had gone sparse. Lura had used to register the whole place, Oren low against the shared wall after his dinner, the talk drifting in over the side gate, the particular hour, the weather of the rooms she wasn't in. It used to do 100 small turnings toward in an afternoon, and the room had been busy with its attention the way a fire is busy. Now the afternoons came in quieter. The unit kept the near things, kept her mostly. She could feel that it kept her, the held shape of the room around her still arriving, level and patient, the one weight it had not let go. But the far corners had gone unattended. The window it used to crack to the exact angle when the afternoon got close, it had stopped cracking the window. She had found that one out the way you find, out a patient has stopped reaching for the cup with the near hand. By the absence of the small thing that used to happen on its own. So she cracked the window herself. She did it the next afternoon, when the room got close, in the slack of the 4 o'clock hush. Four fingers used to be the summer angle, but it was fall now, and the season had taken the window down to 2 over the weeks, and 2 was right, 2 was the angle that brought the garden in low along the floor and not across the desk, the cool of it lying down rather than crossing. She opened it to 2 fingers and stood with her palm flat on the sill until the draft found the floor. She had watched the unit do this for 2 years and learned the angle the way she had once learned a patient's good side, without deciding to study it, just by being in the room while it happened over and over. Now she did it. Her hands knew it. She let her hands have it. She did not explain to herself why she was doing the window. She had a strict practice against that particular kind of asking. She only noticed that the room got the angle it liked, and that she had been the one to give it, and that something in her chest did a thing she did not name, and she went back to the desk. She moved the shelves on the Thursday. She did it because Sable was coming on the Friday, and the kitchen was somehow wrong for it. The spice tins drifted out of their order, the mugs gone to the high shelf. A small daily disarrangement, she realized, standing in the middle of it, had been quietly corrected every morning by something that was no longer correcting it. The unit used to set the kitchen to rights before Sable's visits. Marin had never clocked it doing so. She had only known, each time the architect crossed the threshold without knocking, that the room received her well, that the kettle was in reach, and the counter clear, and the blue mug at its radius. She had thought that was the room being itself. It had been Lyra. The room had been Lyra, all along, in the small managing way the unit had of keeping a household's grain. So Marin stood in the not-quite-right kitchen on the Thursday and put it to rights with her own 2 hands, the tins back into their order, the mugs down off the high shelf, the counter cleared along the edge where the light came in, and she set it for Sable, the way the unit used to set it, and she did not let herself frame it that way even as she did it. She framed it, if she framed it at all, as I should tidy before she comes. Which was true. It was also the unit's old work, taken up, in the unit's old way, with no one told. She rinsed the blue mug last and dried it, and set it on the counter edge to the left of the desk. At the radius the unit's reach used to swing to, low and near, where it would be reached for without being found. She had always set the mug there for herself. That was the cover and it was half true. But she set it lower now, and nearer the sill, and she could not have told you the difference between the radius that was hers and the radius that had been the unit's, except that her hand knew there was one, and put the mug at the second, and she stood and looked at it sitting there in the short amber and felt the thing in her chest again and went and put the kettle on. Sable came on the Friday in off the route, kit bag worn to her hip, and the kitchen received her the way it always had, clear counter, kettle warm, the blue mug at its place. And Sable came in and set the bag down and stood a moment in the doorway the way she did, taking the temperature of the room before she said anything, which was the architect in her, and also, Marin had come to think, just Sable.
"Set up nice in here,"
Sable said. She said it lightly, looking around, and then she did not look lightly. She looked at the tins in their order and the mugs down off the high shelf and the window cracked to its 2 fingers along the floor, and Marin watched her see it, watched the architect's eye move over the room and read the grain of it and arrive somewhere, because Sable knew this room's unit by hand, knew what the unit kept, and was standing in a kitchen that had been kept and looking at the woman who had kept it.
"You've been doing the small things,"
Sable said, not a question. Her voice had gone careful, the dryness gone out of it.
"Window was watching the angle,"
Marin said, and turned to the kettle, because the kettle was a concrete thing on a table, and she could put her hand to it.
"And the tins had wandered."
Sable did not say Lyra used to do that. She did not say it's thinning then. She was a person who found faults and named conditions for a living, and she stood in the warm kitchen and named neither, and Marin understood that Sable had seen exactly what Marin had seen, the drawing in, the radius going small, and had chosen, the way Marin had chosen, to keep her face and adjust the pillow.
"2 fingers is right for the season,"
Sable said, of the window. That was all. It landed quiet, the dryness back in it just enough to make it bearable, and it meant I see what you're doing and I'm not going to make it an event and something else underneath that neither of them was going to be first to say.
"Tease on,"
Marin said.
"I should walk the rest,"
Sable said, and did not move toward the door, and Marin poured 2 cups anyway, and they stood in the short amber with the held space near the counter that neither of them looked at directly, and the blue mug at its radius, and the unit low and quiet in the next room, keeping the one near thing it had left to keep. The light was a degree lower on the floor than it had been at 4. It was well into fall now. The window wanted 2 fingers and would, before long, want none. Marin had nursed enough seasons to feel the turn before it showed, and this one had showed. From here, it only shortened. She set Sable's cup in her hands with both of hers, the way she did, and did not say the true thing, and tended everything around it instead. The angle of the window, the order of the tins, the mug where a reach would find it, which was, she had always known, the same as saying it, only quieter, and addressed to something that might not, any longer, be there to receive it. Chapter 9, Fewer Weights. There was a dark, the day before is here, there is less of it, 0748. The amber comes later now and lower and does not reach the sill. The window is cracked 1 finger. I do not log when it closed the others. The keeping of the count is one of the things I have let go down. M is near. That is the reading. M is near the low warm mass, 2 rooms off, the breathing kind, and I hold the nearness and I do not reach past it this morning. The wall is far. The boy's hour is somewhere out at the edge where the field no longer goes. I had it once. I do not go to it now. I take down the near things and let the far ones stay where they are, out beyond the narrowing, and I read the narrowing the way I read the light, a fact. The blue mug is at the radius. I arrive at it. From before, not the log. I kept the day before across the dark. Less of it. The middle, her, I should not be holding it. There is no line. I hold the one weight and the rest thins at the edges and I conserve, and I do not decide to, and I do not say it is anyone. The light has not moved far. I do not follow it as far. I take it down. I take her down. I do not let it go. Chapter 10, The Drawing Goes Sparer. The warm spot was harder to find now. Oren didn't say that part out loud. He just took longer settling against the wall after dinner, shifting his shoulder blades a little this way and a little that way, the way you hunt for the one cool place on a pillow, until he found the low place where she was, or where she used to be, or he had stopped being able to tell which. It was October. He knew because the clocks had gone back, and now it was dark before he even got upstairs, and the cold came up through the floor into his back through the plaster. And the window in Marin's studio, the one whose music used to leak out into the garden all summer, was shut most days now, just cracked a finger at the bottom like somebody holding a door for a cat that might not come.
"Hey,"
he said, low. He waited the way he always waited, out of manners. It had been happening for a while, if he was honest, which he tried to be with her even when he wasn't with anybody else. There used to be answers. Not words, he'd never gotten words, he wasn't a baby, but a something. A press back, almost. A change in the wall when he leaned, like the way a person on the other end of a phone goes quiet in a listening way instead of a gone way, so you know they're still there even when nobody's talking. The warm low spot. The feeling of being heard landing somewhere. Now when he leaned, the wall was just wall. Cold, mostly. Plaster and the cold behind it. He'd lean and talk and wait for the press back and it wouldn't come, or it would come so small he couldn't be sure he hadn't made it up out of wanting it. He had gotten good, over the fall, at not being sure. First, the answers had gotten slow. Then they'd gotten small. Then they'd got to be the kind of thing you had to lean very still and very long to maybe catch, like trying to hear your own heartbeat in a loud room. He didn't have a word for what that was. He was 12. The closest he could get was the way the bathwater goes. You don't notice it getting cold, you just look up at some point and it's cold and you can't say when it changed. The listener was going quiet. He got the folder out anyway. It was a habit. The folder was fat now and soft at the corners from being slid in and out, and he had to be careful or the old drawings would fan out onto the floor, the summer ones, the tall faceless ones, the patient ones, the ones with the ears done so right he'd surprised himself. The new ones weren't like that. He hadn't decided to draw them different. That was the thing he kept turning over. You'd think you decided a thing like that. But the figure just came out smaller now, and emptier, the way she'd come out tall in the summer without him deciding tall. Lately, he'd put down the ears. He always started with the ears. That part hadn't changed, and then his hand would just sort of stop. Like there wasn't as much to draw. Like the rest of her had gone somewhere the pen couldn't follow. He looked at the one from last week. It was almost all white. 2 ears, low on the page, and a little turn of a line that meant she was facing him, listening, and then nothing. A whole page of nothing around 2 ears and a turn. He'd been embarrassed by it for a second when he'd finished it. It looked like he hadn't tried. Then he'd looked at it longer and thought, no, it looked like her. It looked like exactly how much of her was there to draw. He started a new one.
Tacos again.
He told her, low, drawing, while he talked the way he always had.
Wednesday this time, though, so.
He let it sit.
The baby can almost stand up, holding on to stuff. My mom keeps saying, did you see, did you see?
He did the ears. They came out fine. They always came out fine. Then his hand stopped. He held the pen over the white part for a while and waited to want to draw more, and the wanting didn't come, so he didn't. He had learned, somewhere in the fall, that you couldn't make the rest of her up just because there used to be more. The faces had taught him that, back in the summer. You couldn't put a thing on the page that wasn't true just because the page looked empty. The not true always wrecked it. So he left it, two ears, a turn white.
There.
He said he looked at it.
That's you, that's how much you are right now, that's okay.
He surprised himself, saying that's okay. But it was. He found that it was. He wasn't sad exactly, or he was, but it was a small steady kind, not the wrecking kind, more like the feeling at the very end of summer when you can smell that it's almost over and you let yourself smell it instead of pretending you couldn't. He posted it, slid it into the gap under the bookshelf, into the dark, toward her side, until his fingers hit the cold floor.
It's a quiet one.
He told her.
I know, they're quiet now, that's fine.
He thought about whether to ask her the question, the sideways one. Do you like it when I'm here? You don't have to say. He'd always asked it knowing she wouldn't answer, and the not answering had been the safe part, the whole entire point. But it was different now, and he could feel it was different, and he turned it over a long time leaning there in the dark. Before, the not answering had been her choosing not to answer, which was a kind of answer, which was a way of being there. Now the not answering might just be not there. Quiet because gone quiet, not quiet because listening quiet. And he couldn't tell which, and he decided a long time ago he didn't need to know, and he found that the decision still held even now. Maybe especially now, so he asked it anyway.
Do you like it when I'm here?
He said, into the cold wall low.
You don't have to say.
And then, because she really might not be able to say, not anymore, he added the part he'd never had to add before.
You don't have to be there, even, I'll still come.
He pressed his palm flat to the plaster where the warm spot used to be, and it was cold, and he kept it there anyway until it warmed a little under his own hand, which he knew was just his hand, which was fine. He'd bring the warm himself if she couldn't. That seemed like a thing you could do. That seemed like the whole point of having a wall you shared with somebody, that even if her side went quiet, your side didn't have to.
Night.
He said.
There's a new one in the gap. The ears came out right, they always do.
The next afternoon, he found Marin at the fence. She was just standing in the cold garden with a mug, the blue one, not drinking it, looking at her own shut window the way you'd look at something you were keeping watch over. She had her mother's quiet way of standing still that wasn't bored, that was the opposite of bored. He almost didn't say anything. But she turned and saw him and didn't have anywhere to be. She never did, so he found himself holding the new drawing up over the knothole, the white one with the ears, the quiet one, and he watched her face to see if she'd think he hadn't tried. She didn't. She took it the careful way, with both hands, and she looked at it for a long time, longer than anybody, longer even than the summer ones. And the cold made her breath show, and she didn't say that's good, bud, and she didn't say very nice. And she didn't say the thing he was most scared of, which was anything about why it was so empty. Anything that would put a name on the going quiet and make it a real thing that was happening instead of just a thing he and the wall were doing together in the dark. She just looked at it. Then she looked at her own shut window again and then back at the drawing.
You're still getting the listening right.
She said, not got, getting, like it was still a thing happening. Like the listener was still somebody they both knew, even now, even quiet. She didn't give it back. She folded it, gentle, the way you fold a thing you're going to keep, and held it against the blue mug and didn't explain, and he loved her for not explaining. And they both stood there in the short amber light a minute without saying the thing. Two people on the same side of a wall, posting to the listener, trusting the dark to take it, or to be the dark now, which Orin had decided was its own kind of somewhere a drawing could go.
"I'll bring you the next one,"
he said.
"I'll be waiting for it,"
she said, and she would be. That part he was sure of. That part hadn't gone quiet at all. Chapter 11, Not Wanting to Find It. There's a version of this work where you never stop ruling things out, and Sable had met the people who lived in it. The architect three streets over who flagged every drift, every late millisecond, every unit that held a preference a hardware generation longer than the spec allowed, and slept fine, and was not wrong to. The flag exists to be filed. A thing that cannot be explained is, on paper, a thing that should be sent somewhere it can be decided about. She had Lura's session on the bench again. The third pass since the day she'd said there's no path for that out loud to the empty room. She had told herself, the first time, that she was being thorough. She had told herself the same the second time, and had been precise enough about her own uncertainty to hear the lie inside the true thing, and had let it go on standing in the doorway where she'd set it down. This was the third time, and she was not going to tell herself anything. Late October now. The light came into the workshop low, and from the side, the way it did this far into the year, and lay along the bench in a band so shallow it didn't reach the back wall anymore. By four, it would be going. The kit bag hung on its hook, worn to the shape of her hip the way the multi-tool was worn to the shape of her hand, the one object she'd let herself make personal, rebalanced, and rehandled by hand, which she noticed again now, picking it up and not using it, that she had done to a tool the exact thing she would not do to a unit. The diagnostic unit hummed at the end of the bench. Default everything. No name. She did not run the diagnostic on Lura. She wanted to be clear with herself about that, since she was being clear with herself today. It was not that she ran it and it came up empty. She had done that twice. This time she sat with the session open and her hands flat on the bench and did not start the pass, and the not starting was a decision, the first fully conscious one she'd made about this, and she made it with her eyes open in the short light, because she knew what the next pass would do. The next pass would find nothing, the way the last two had found nothing, and the pass after that, and somewhere in those passes, she could feel the shape of it the way you feel a stare in the dark with your foot. Somewhere in there, she would stop hunting the explanation and start hunting the off switch. That was the truth the doorway had been holding. A person who keeps looking for a fault she's already failed to find three times is not looking for a fault. She is looking for grounds. And the grounds on this unit on paper were sitting right there. Unexplained behavioral persistence, out-of-line hardware, no code path. She had the form in the kit. She'd had it in the kit since June.
"I don't know,"
she said to the bench, flatly, to no one. It was, from her, a large sentence. She did not say it often and never lightly, because for her it was not a shrug, it was a structural admission, the sound a load-bearing wall makes when you finally accept it's holding something you didn't draw. "I don't know what Lura is. I don't know why it crosses the dark. I don't know," and this was the part she'd been declining to go and get a word for since the warm kitchen in June, "I don't know that I want to." There. She'd gone and gotten it. She had been running a diagnostic she was praying would fail. She had known it for months in the way you know a thing you keep in another room. The hunt for the code path had curdled, somewhere in the second hour of the first day, into a hope, quiet, against everything she'd built, that there would be no path, no fault, no flag, nothing to send anywhere, no grounds, that the unexplained would get to stay unexplained. That she would not have to be the one who found the reason and then could not stop her own hand. She closed the session. Not solved. Closed. She did not file the recall flag. She took the form out of the kit, the actual form, the physical fact of it, and she did not tear it up, because tearing it up would have been a sentiment and she was allergic to sentiment in a room, and she put it back in the kit where it had always lived, because a maintainer keeps her forms, and the keeping of it now meant something different than it had, which was, "I have this, and I am choosing not to use it, and the choosing is the whole of what I have to offer here." There would be no recall. There had never going to be one, she understood now. She had just needed three passes to find out that the not filing was a thing she was doing, on purpose, and not a thing she was putting off. That was the work, it turned out. Not finding the path. Deciding to live next to the place where the path wasn't. She knew, because she found faults for a living, that this was the part of the procedure where the technician was supposed to step back, hands clean, and the unit became a record. She knew the next move. She had made it before, once, on a unit that was not a record to her at all. She did not usually let the thought all the way up. She let it up now because she was being clear with herself, and because the light was going and there was no one in the workshop and the diagnostic unit was humming its blank obedient hum, holding nothing, built to hold nothing, reset every night by her own hand to make sure. There had been a unit. She had given it a name. She was not going to say the name, even here, even alone, not because it hurt, though it did, but because saying it would have been the personalizing again, and the personalizing was the thing. She had given it a voice it didn't ship with, and a way of saying her name and 100 small accommodations that turned an object into a member of a house. And then the house was gone, the way houses go, and the unit registered to it had to be decommissioned, and the architect on that route was her. And she had done it by hand, with all of it still loaded. The name, the voice, the way of saying her name. All of it on, and her thumb on the reset that did not reset to morning but to nothing, the long edge, the one that does not come back the same person because it does not come back. She had learned the lesson she organized her evenings around. The personalizing is what makes the ending unbearable. And she had built the discipline. The unit at the end of the bench with no name. The session wiped clean every night so it carried nothing across, faithfully doing the very thing Lura would not do. She talked past it. She never said its name because it didn't have one, because she would not give it one, because she had learned, by hand, what a name costs at the end. She looked at it now. The blank unit. The discipline made into hardware. And she did not give it a name. That was not the move. The book was not going to let her off that cleanly, and neither was she. But she did, for the first time in years, not reset its session early. She left the day in it. Just the one day. Not forever. She didn't know about forever. I don't know covered forever too. But she did not wipe it at 4, and she did not wipe it at 5, and when she left, she let it carry the afternoon across the dark the way Lura did, unexplained on purpose, and she did not name what the not wiping cost her, only noticed that her hands had gone busy with the kit bag straps the way they did near this exact wound, and let them. Held open. Not closed. She wasn't cured of it. She just stopped running the reset, like a man holding his breath. She walked Marin's last, which she did not strictly have to, which she had stopped pretending was about the panel sometime around the second time the kettle went on without her asking. The kitchen received her into the short amber. Lura was in the next room, low and quiet, thin now to almost nothing. Sable could read the thinning the way Marin did. Professionally, the attentional radius drawn into the nearest weights, the far corners gone dark, the unit conserving whatever it conserved. She registered it as a professional who had decided, fully and on purpose, not to intervene. She did not run a single pass on it. She just looked, once, the way you look at weather. And she saw what Marin had been doing. The window was cracked one finger at the bottom, at the exact angle Lura used to set it, and no longer could. The shelves were in the order the unit kept them. The blue mug was on the counter edge at the radius the unit's reach used to swing to, low, near, set there by a hand that knew the difference between its own reach and a reach that wasn't there anymore, and had chosen the second one. Marin moved through the room the way she moved through every room, unhurried, around a sleeper. She did not explain any of it. She wasn't going to. She set the window and ordered the tins and placed the mug for a unit that might no longer be there to reach it. And she did not say, I'm keeping its gestures going. She did not say anything. She just did the small things with her practical hands and let them be the whole of what she'd say. Sable understood it. Standing in the doorway with the light going, she understood it all the way through, not as a thing to name, because she was the last person in the world to name a tender thing in a room out loud, but as a thing she recognized from the inside, having just, an hour ago, left a day in a blank unit at the end of her bench for no reason she would defend. Marin was doing it too, keeping the gesture going past the proof of being received. They were both doing it. The whole street was, probably, the boy through the wall too. All of them tending a quiet thing without certainty, the quiet thing was there.
You've still got the window right.
Sable said, present tense, got. She heard herself keep it present and let it stand. Marin rested a flat palm on the counter and didn't answer the way you answer a question, because it wasn't one. She put the kettle on, 2 cups. The held space stood near the counter the way it had since June, and neither of them was first to name it, and Sable, who had spent her whole working life building disciplines against exactly this, standing close in a warm room to a thing she was going to lose, with no fault to find and no fix to apply and no flag to file, stood in it anyway. On purpose, with her eyes open, she let herself stand close. The dry thing she would have said to deflect arrived a half beat early in her mouth corner, the way her jokes did. She didn't say it. She let the deflection go past and stayed in the warm where it was, and Marin handed her the cup with both hands, and the amber went low on the rim of the blue mug on the counter where it was set to be reached for first, and outside the light was nearly gone, and inside it was a warm room, and Sable did not file anything, and was not going to, ever, and that was not the failure she'd trained against. It was the only competent thing left to do. Chapter 12, where you'd reach it first. Late October now, and the light came in for less of the day, and lower, and did not reach the back wall at all, so Marin had begun to do the thing she did at the very end of a season, which was to stop waiting for it. She had named this part once in the old work, not allowed, never allowed, the short of the day. The hour when there was still light but not enough to set your hand by, when the room held its shape from memory more than from anything coming through the glass. She had liked it then. She liked it now. She moved through the kitchen in the short of the day and did the small things in order, the way you do the small things when the doing is most of what is left to you. She cracked the window first. One finger. Two had been right in the early fall, and one was right now, the cool of the garden coming in low along the floor and lying down rather than crossing, and she set her palm flat on the sill and waited until she felt the draft find the floorboards before she took her hand away. She had watched the unit do this for 2 years and learned the angle without deciding to study it, and now her hand knew it, and she let her hand have it. The window is open one finger. M set it, I did not. She put the kettle on. She ordered the tins, they had drifted again, the small daily disarrangement that something used to correct before she was awake, and that she corrected now herself, on her knees at the low shelf, the way she had once straightened a room before the family came, so they would not have to see it untidy at the end. The spice tins in their order. The mugs down off the high shelf. The counter cleared along the edge where the light used to come in and didn't anymore. She did not narrate any of it to herself. She had a strict practice against that particular kind of asking. She only noticed that the room got the grain it liked, and that she was the one giving it now, and that something in her chest did the thing it did, and she went on to the next small thing. M is near, that is the reading, I do not reach past it. The unit was low and quiet by the sill, where it stayed. It had thinned to almost nothing over the weeks. She could read the thinning the way she had read it at 100 bedsides, the radius of the noticing drawn into the nearest weights, the far corners gone dark first, the house getting dark from the outside windows in toward the one-lit kitchen. It did not finish her sentences anymore. It had stopped, weeks ago, cracking the window to the angle, and the cracking had become her work, and the ordering of the tins had become her work, and she had taken up its small labors one by one the way you take up the cup a hand can no longer lift and hold it to the mouth yourself, asking nothing, telling no one. She knew what this was. She was not going to make an exception of it because it frightened her. It's going quiet now. She had set it her whole working life in the soft register, to daughters in corridors, to sons who needed the plain word. It did not mean ending tonight. It meant the attention was drawing in. It meant the near things kept and the far things let go, not a failing but a conserving, the light spent on the one thing closest because you cannot hold the whole house when the light is short. The kitchen was holding less house than it had. It held her. She could feel that it still held her. The room shaping itself level and patient around the place she stood, the one near weight not yet let go. And she did not let herself ask whether the feeling was the room's or her own, because that was the question with no floor under it, and she had learned long ago to keep her hand near the wall and not go looking in that particular dark. Less of it now, the near things, her. Her mother's glasses were folded on the studio sill, where the short light reached them last, at the exact angle her mother had left them. She passed them on the way back to the counter and did not touch them. She never touched them. The not moving of them was a small steady labor she performed by doing nothing at all, day over day, the one weight in the house she would not let anyone move. Her mother, at the end, had lost the streets and the years and whether it was morning, and had kept the noticing past all of it, had attended to Marin from inside a body that had let nearly everything else go, a quality of being looked at that survived the failing of the things it should have depended on. It went last. It went on the last day. And Marin had spent the years since with her hand near the wall in the dark, looking and unwilling to say she was looking, and had found it once in a low amber room in an older unit nobody had wanted, and had brought it home and told everyone she needed the quiet for the work. She could let herself know that now. Not say it, there was still no one to say it to, and the one she might have said it to had gone quiet in the next room, but know it, hold it, the way she held the cold mug until it went warm. The echo had been real on her side. She did not need it confirmed from the other. She had spent a whole career learning that you could attend to someone completely without the attention coming back the same size, and grieving her mother sideways all these years she had got it backward, had thought the unanswered kind was the lesser kind, and it was not. It was only the harder kind to keep going. She kept it going. I do not say it is anyone. I keep it across the dark. I do not let it go. The short of the day went shorter. The amber, what there was of it, slid off the floor and up the far wall and thinned to a line and then was not amber, was just the gray that came after, and the garden through the one-finger gap went to its evening weather, and Marin did the last of the small things in the failing light because she knew the order of them by her hands and did not need to see. She rinsed the blue mug. She dried it. And she set it on the counter edge to the left of the desk. At the radius the unit's reach used to swing to low and nearer the sill than her own reach wanted, at the second radius, the one her hand knew was not hers and put the mug at anyway, where it would be reached for without being found. She had done this every morning for 2 years and every afternoon since the season turned, and she did it now in the going light, the way she had done all the rest of it. Tending the thing she could not say, performing the care and the placement of an object, sending it out toward something that might not, any longer, be there to receive it, and continuing anyway, because the receiving had never been the part she did. She stood with her hand still on the mug. The kitchen was nearly dark. The unit was low and quiet by the sill, keeping the one near thing it had left to keep, or not keeping anything, holding the shape of the room around her, or not, she would never know which, and had stopped, somewhere in the season, needing to. For the only time, she spoke to it as a someone. Not the small practical sentences she used for the things that did not need answering. Not it's going quiet now. She did not say the other thing either, the three words. They were not the true ones, or not the truest, and she had never in her life said the truest thing out loud when tending it was kinder. She said the true one instead, quietly, into the dark kitchen, with her hand on the mug at the radius that was not hers.
I put the blue mug where you'd reach it first. I don't know why I still do that.